to another edition of Flea Market Fantasy, the world's second greatest Bronze Age era comic book podcast. Joining me, as always, is new Mike Yell, Kevin Jank.
Oh, I forgot what I was supposed to say. Yeah. Just like you.
Every week. The show. I've been hosting it now for almost 2 years, but we've been doing it for several years. And I forget what I have to say at the beginning of every show.
Yeah. It's always a mystery. It just comes to you out of the ether.
It's a lack of protein. So, Jank, this week you picked a book. Tell the kids what we're reading.
So this week we're going to be doing Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, issue number 43.
Not to be confused with Peter Parker, the average Spider-Man. This is Peter Parker, the spectacular Spider-Man.
Yes.
And the reason you pick this is why?
I guess because it was a good excuse to talk about the Hobgoblin, but to do it in a different kind of way. I mean, we could do like an actual good Hobgoblin story, but where's the fun in that? We like to do, you know, terrible forgotten books in this.
Yes, show, so. That's exactly right.
I figured we would do the first appearance of the man who would eventually be revealed as the original Hobgoblin.
Yeah, I didn't mean that. Why? It sounded like I was saying, why did you pick this? No, I just meant like, why did you do this? Like, just to explain why.
What's the rationale?
Yes, it wasn't an indictment.
Not
of the
a
choice.
Trial here.
Yeah. All right. So, we'll get to that in a minute, but before we do, let's remind everybody, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. I checked right before the show, Jank, we're up to 178 subscribers, so we picked up a few more, and that's shocking because no one is watching that Archie episode.
I saw that. Yeah, that one hit hard.
No one likes that.
I might be the only Archie fan alive.
But we tried. So, yeah, please like and subscribe. Again, the goal is 500 subscribers. We're a long way away.
We're slowly inching our way towards freedom.
And the Flea Market Fantasy t-shirts are now available at merch.19books.com. They are flying off the shelves.
Oh, that's good news.
Yes. We can't keep them in stock. If only every subscriber purchased 600 to 700 shirts, this channel will be profitable. Well, so let's make it work.
We'll be turning a profit by 2075.
So there it is. All right, Spectacular Spider-Man. I'm sorry, Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, issue 43.
Yeah, we'll eventually just get short to the Spectacular Spider-Man.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here in a second. There's actually two issues of a Spectacular Spider-Man magazine published in 1968. I did not know that.
I think one of the covers is kind of like a painted version of the whole Green Goblin flying with Peter Parker behind, you know, in a rope, right?
Yeah, that's issue two. There are two issues, both with painted covers. These are black and white magazines. If you have one of them, they're worth a good bit. I think I saw the first one's worth like $200-$300, and I think the second one is less than that, but still pretty good book. I didn't even know these existed, so. Did you, or these
yeah,
like, did
I have
you
no
read
idea
it?
What the contents of them are, but I've seen those covers.
Yeah.
And I think just in, you know, in adding my comic books to my, whatever that program is that I use, the database program, I think I saw it listed in there. You know, when I'm looking up Spectacular Spider-Man, it's like, there's actually a Spectacular Spider-Man Volume 1.
Yes, that is what it refers to, the magazine. And then the regular series started in December 1976. It was originally called Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, but the title was shortened to just Spectacular Spider-Man with issue 134 in 1988. And the series ran for 264 issues and 14 annuals, ending in 1998. I wasn't a big Spider-Man guy when I was a kid. It was more X-Men and everything. But when I did buy Spider-Man, it was always Amazing Spider-Man. I never really got into the were you buying the Spectacular? What was the other one? Web of? Is that the other one?
Web of, and then eventually, you know, in the 90s, they came out with Adjectiveless Spider-Man, which was the Todd McFarlane book.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So there were four books there, you know, for in
that
a while.
That's crazy.
In the 90s. And then they canceled Web and brought in a new one called Sensational Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
yeah. And then the Adjectiveless Spider-Man kind of picked up the Peter Parker once the Clone Saga ended and Peter Parker was back. They're like, okay, we're going to call Spider-Man Peter Parker Spider-Man now. So they kind of got the Peter Parker adjective there. And eventually they're just like, we're cutting down. We're going to go just to in 1998, which was when this book got canceled. That was when they were like, we're just going to have Amazing Spider-Man and Peter Parker Spider-Man. That's it.
Yeah, it's probably for the best. The original
and then
creative.
Eventually, like, even later on, they were like, let's just get rid of, like, Peter Parker Spider-Man and just do Amazing Spider-Man 3 times a month.
Oh, well, that's weird. I don't like that at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So three times a month?
Yeah, it was like a rotating group of writers and artists, which is never a good thing.
No, that's terrible. Who gave that the green light? That is an awful idea. Yeah. All right. So the original creative team for this book was Jerry Conway and Sal Buscema. Stan Lee wanted Conway back on The Amazing Spider-Man. Because Conway's career is very weird there for a while. He kept jumping back and forth. So when he came back to Marvel, Stan Lee said, hey, we want you back on Spider-Man. But Conway didn't want to take the book away from Len Wein, who was writing it at the time. So Stan Lee says, all right, we'll just create another Spider-Man book. And we'll call it Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man. And the original idea was to focus more on supporting characters and Peter Parker's social life. But Conway left after only 3 issues, so that idea never really got fleshed out. And,
did he go back to DC? Or?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
It's very confusing. But anyway, so
happy everywhere.
Because I remember when I did that show with Mike L, Here Comes the Spider Cast. I would be a guest on there occasionally, and they would read all the Spider-Man books during the 1980s or whatever. And wasn't there one where the stories all took place out of New York City? Was that Webb?
That was Webb. The early days of Webb. I think they were trying to do that to differentiate it. Now, Webb is really the wimpy little brother of the group, where it's like, I don't think anybody really likes Webb that much, but Spectacular definitely gives Amazing a run for its money at certain times, but Webb, I don't know. I don't know if it ever really came into its own.
All right, the couple villains in this book. The main one is a lady named Belladonna.
Yeah.
She's very
famous. That
classic
Spider-Man villain that everyone loves. To this day.
I've never encountered her before in my life. And has she popped up?
I know
up
she comes back in another 2 issues, like I think it's like 46 and 47 of the same book.
Yeah.
But after that, I don't know that she's ever come back.
Yeah. Well, her real name is Narda Ravana, and this was her first appearance. So, the creators here for this book are Roger Stern is the writer, and Mike Zeck is the artist. And so they're the creators of Belladonna. And she had a sister named Desiree Von Pope. And together they ran a successful fashion design firm in Europe. And the man we're about to talk about next stole her designs.
Ooh.
So she came to America to get revenge.
Yep.
Yeah.
With gas. Lots of gas.
Yeah. She ate a lot of chili. No, she's named Belladonna after the poisonous plant. And she shoots this poisonous gas everywhere and that makes you loopy. Although apparently it also helps you see in the dark, which is weird.
Yeah. At least Roger Stern did his research, I guess.
Well, I don't know how true that is.
I don't know. I don't know if I should go drinking some vinegar and then go, expose myself to Belladonna. I don't know what's going to happen.
If you really want to see in the dark. All right, so the other big villain in this book, although he's not really a villain yet.
Not yet, no.
He's kind of a jerk. And this is Roderick Kingsley. And this is his first appearance, also created by Stern and Zeck and John Romita Jr., although I don't know if that's because of what he turned into later that they gave her Jr.
Yeah, I would think so. Because I don't know why they call in, we need 2 artists to design this guy who kind of looks like Paul Lynde.
Yeah. Yeah, so in this book, Roderick Kingsley is a fashion designer who stole the designs of Belladonna, and he's just a spindly little guy, and he would eventually become who, Jank?
The Hobgoblin.
That's
many, many years down the line, we would finally get the true identity of the Hobgoblin, way past the point of anyone caring anymore.
All right, so his first appearance as the Hobgoblin was Amazing Spider-Man 238 in 1982. And then many years later, 20 years later, in 2012, he also became a character named Devil Spider in Amazing Spider-Man 691. Are you aware of this at all?
I'm sure I read that, but that's how forgettable those issues were. I don't remember it.
Yeah, no idea. All right, so we've talked about Hobgoblin before on the show, but I always get confused on this. So when I was a kid, the Hobgoblin, I wasn't way into Hobgoblin too much, but what I the thing I remember was that he was Ned Leeds, and, and Ned Leeds died in Wolverine and Spider-Man, because that book was awesome. And, I love that book very much. But I always thought, oh, Ned Leeds is Hobgoblin. And that's how I lived my life for many years into adulthood. And then all of a sudden I find out, hey, there's all these other Hobgoblins. And that's not, Ned Leeds wasn't the Hobgoblin. It was, someone else was the Hobgoblin. And you mentioned to me one
another
time, it was Roderick Kingsley. Who the hell is Roderick Kingsley? I've never heard of him. So explain all the Hobgoblin stuff to the kids.
Yeah, so the Hobgoblin was also created by Roger Stern later on, same when he got bumped over to Amazing Spider-Man. He wanted to create a new goblin because there hadn't been a Green Goblin for a little while, not since Bart Hamilton, the third Green Goblin, when his short
Who?
Run.
Who the hell is
the blue? Yeah, that was Harry Osborn's therapist.
Oh, good lord.
Basically, well, you know, while in one of his, you know, drugged out stupors, Harry told him about this and he got the great idea to go be
a Green Goblin. I had no idea there's a Green Goblin.
Yeah. But, so yeah, I like the origin of the Hobgoblin because it kind of, it's reminiscent of Peter Parker's, you know, original origin. Cause like he's chasing down some bank robbers and, like he gets three of the four, but another one gets away and he goes in the sewers and Peter Parker's just kind of like, eh. You know what? I don't really feel like going around the sewers. At least it smells like poo gas down here. So I'll just get that guy later. I got to go get my camera and stuff. So he lets that guy go. And while he's down there, this guy happens upon one of the Green Goblin's many caches of, you know, goblin gear. And
Green Goblin squirreled them away around the city.
Yeah. Oh, he's got them everywhere.
I had no idea. Right.
You never know when you want to turn into a goblin. So he goes and tells his boss, who is a shadowy figure whose face is not seen, and he tells his boss about this, and the boss is like, oh, hey, yeah, thanks for telling me. And then like he blows up the van this guy is driving to, so, you know, no one will know anything about this except for him. And so this shadowy guy becomes the Hobgoblin, a new form of goblin that we, you know, haven't seen. His identity is a mystery. I guess the original I think Stern's plan was he wanted to keep his identity a mystery for 26 issues, which would have been one more than the Green Goblin's identity was kept a secret.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. But it ended up blowing, I think, way past that because he left the book before it was ever revealed. So they just kind of did what they wanted after that. But he apparently, his intention was always to have Roderick Kingsley, this guy in this book here, become the Hobgoblin because
really?
I guess – I don't know if he knew that from the second he wrote it, you know, he created the character, but he quickly realized the same voice he was using for the Hobgoblin was the same voice he was using for Roderick Kingsley. And he's like, hey, wait a minute. That's
all right. Because then he left the book. So
yes.
At some point, Tom DeFalco, I don't know, was he writing the book?
Tom DeFalco had been the editor for Roger Stern. Then a new editor came in and Roger Stern hated him, I guess. So he left the book, and somehow Tom DeFalco, who had been the editor, got put in as the writer.
Yes.
And his big plan was he wanted to make the Hobgoblin Richard Fisk, the son of the Kingpin, who eventually became the Rose.
Yes, and he wanted Kingsley to be the Rose.
Ah. I heard that originally when he created the Rose, like, he didn't even intend for it to be much of a mystery or anything like that. He was just like, this is just like a mid-level manager of the mafia. Like, there's got to be some mid-level guys who nobody cares about. So he kind of created him just for that. But
yeah,
then
but
people were like, oh, who's behind that mask? So, like, then they had to, like, come up with, oh, I guess we should make this an actual mystery.
Yeah, that's what I read. Like, he noticed that people were intrigued by who the Rose was. So, and his original idea was to make it Kingsley, and then he ended up leaving the book. So,
because I guess Jim Owsley then became the editor, and him and Tom DeFalco, I guess, really had a lot of bad blood for whatever reason. These guys did not get along at all. So I guess at some kind of a conference or, you know, writers conference, whatever, Owsley flat out asked, you know, Tom DeFalco, okay, who is the Hobgoblin? And Tom DeFalco, not wanting to tell him it's Richard Fisk because he doesn't trust Owls Lee at all, he's like, Ned Leeds. And so Jim Owls Lee, proving that DeFalco was right about him, decides, hey, we definitely have to go kill off Ned Leeds right now just to screw over DeFalco.
Holy hell.
And so, yep, he does. And if Ned Leeds had been the Hobgoblin, it would have been so unsatisfying the way they did it. Because they had to die in Spider-Man and Wolverine. And then they, like, after the fact, reveal it. Oh, yeah, that guy who died, he was the Hobgoblin. Like,
yes, I agree. I agree entirely. That was a real letdown. You're like, oh, wait, he died as just Ned Leeds, not even as the Hobgoblin. Usually you die as the villain and they take the mask off. Oh, it's Ned Leeds. But no,
yeah, not just, happened. Oh, here's some pictures we found after the fact that show he was a Hobgoblin. Like, oh, that's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, it's terrible. All right, so then there was another guy, though, who was shown. Well, wasn't Flash Thompson, like, framed to be the Hobgoblin at some point?
During the Hobgoblin's reign, there had been a couple people who were framed. Like, there was one guy, Lefty Donovan, just like a small-time.
Oh, I never heard of that guy.
Yeah. Hobgoblin brainwashed him. And basically, I think he had Norman Osborn's notes for the Goblin formula, but he was like, I don't know. I'm going to test this out on somebody else first. So he tested it out on this Lefty Donovan guy. And of course,
He
was insane. So he was like, oh, okay, I'm going to fix this before I take it.
That's good thinking.
So, it was smart. And then he framed Flash Thompson for it at one point. So you can kind of see that.
Was there a guy named Jason something with an M?
Jason McIndale, he was the next Hobgoblin. Yeah, after Ned Leeds has already died, he had been a character called Jack-O-Lantern, who's like kind of similar, like a glider, but he's got like a pumpkin head. Yeah,
yeah, I remember.
So
that,
he had kind of somewhat arranged the hit on Ned Leeds so that he could take over as the Hobgoblin, essentially. So then he was the second Hobgoblin through the late 80s into the early 90s.
Okay, but originally Ned Leeds technically was the Hobgoblin, but he wasn't. Wasn't the story then that Kingsley had brainwashed him or something? Or
yes, I think it was 1996. They let Roger Stern do a 3-issue limited series called "The Hobgoblin Lives," I think it was called, and it basically lets him retcon, the whole Ned Leeds being the Hobgoblin thing, and. They start investigating it a little bit more, and somebody is saying something at the courthouse, but eventually the old Hobgoblin reappears and mysteriously kills Jason McIndale in prison. And they're like, shit, there's another guy out there. So yeah, this is where they reveal that, it was Roderick Kingsley all along who had been the Hobgoblin. Now, the tricky part about this is they had shown many times Roderick Kingsley working for the Hobgoblin, because the Hobgoblin was like a big blackmailer. Like, he was blackmailing all kind of rich business people. And one of those was Roderick Kingsley. But apparently Roger Stern's plan all along had been, in one issue, they briefly mentioned, Roderick Kingsley has a brother. And
oh my gosh.
So apparently the brother looks just like him, except he has less hair, but he can wear a hairpiece. Makes him look just like him.
Terrible.
Yeah. So whenever we saw them together, that was just Daniel Kingsley pretending to be Roderick Kingsley.
That's awful.
That's the part where it falls apart for me. It's like,
Roderick
Kingsley that we see in that book is a lot different than we see here. Like, he actually is cunning and, scary, unlike this guy.
In this book, Kingsley is a fashion designer, and it's heavily implied he's a gay fella. And then I guess Stern got criticized for how he was writing him. So he didn't want to make it seem like he was taking shots at a homosexual character. So the next time we see Roderick Kingsley, he's got a lady with him, He's like, see, he wasn't gay at all. Yeah, there's his girlfriend, Yeah, he's not an intimidating fella in this book. They even mention how thin he is and how,
Peter Parker, like, Spider-Man's just like, this guy's, they called me Puny Parker. Look at this guy.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, how the hell does this guy become a Hobgoblin? But I guess he found that Green Goblin serum and it made him buffed.
Yeah.
So he got him on
yep, that's, that is one of the things that's kind of cool is then when, like the first time the Hobgoblin fights Spider-Man, he doesn't have the formula yet. Like, he hasn't taken it. So he does kind of get his ass whooped a little bit. But then he does take the formula, and then it's a lot more, you know, intimidating after that.
All right, so there you go. So this Kingsley fellow, then, was he the Hobgoblin then the rest of the way? Like, is he just...
Yeah, pretty much. I think at one point they had Phil Urich, who was Ben Urich's nephew, who had been the heroic Green Goblin.
I didn't know there was a heroic Green Goblin.
Yeah, that was in the 90s. That was the thing. But he went crazy and ended up going bad. So he killed who he thought was Roderick Kingsley and took over being the Hobgoblin. But it turned out he fell for that old trap, and he only killed Daniel Kingsley.
Oh, no.
So Roderick Kingsley, I believe, did come back. And I think he was like, all right, you can keep being the Hobgoblin, but you got to pay me royalties, basically. It's like I'm franchising it out to you.
He got tricked Donald by that, now. He got tricked by that damn hairpiece. They killed the wrong Hobgoblin. So, and then at one point, the Hobgoblin becomes a Demo Goblin. Remember, we did that Inferno issue, right? Didn't he?
Yeah.
He was like possessed.
That was like Jason McIndale, during Inferno, possessed by a demon. And then eventually the demon gets, like, exorcised and becomes its own goblin, the Demo Goblin.
A lot of goblins. God bless comic books. They get one idea and they just beat the hell out of it.
Yep. Don't even give me the Red Goblin, and
let's just call. Let's make him a different color. All right, that's good.
He didn't have the Goblin for him. Norman Osborn. They gave him the Carnage symbiote, so he became the Red Goblin. I don't know. They're just throwing shit at the walls at that point.
But again, in this book, that is years down the road yet.
Yes.
This is just Roderick Kingsley, fashion designer. That's all he is.
Just kind of a jerk, mild-mannered jerk.
Yeah. So I'm supposed to believe Roderick Kingsley was blowing up vans and everything then too, like to kill that guy who found the Green Goblin serum?
Framing people, killing them, blackmailing everybody, intimidating the Kingpin so that he would work with Spider-Man. Like,
he's intimidating the Kingpin?
It's crazy.
That can't work out so well. All right, well, I guess that's all the background we need to know this story. And let's look at the cover there, Jank.
Yeah, it's not my favorite cover, I'll say that.
It's a weird composition. This is actually drawn by John Byrne.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can kind of see that. So we got the corner box with Spider-Man taking off his mask. That's kind of cool. It says Marvel Comics Group, Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man.
I mean, any villain who picks up this book will know that he's Spider-Man. I don't know if they should put that right on the cover.
Yeah, probably a bad move. Too much advertising.
Yeah.
So we got a shot of Spider-Man, mostly from behind. He's kind of crouched over there. Spider sense is tingling. And there's a bunch of smoke. And then in the smoke, we can kind of see the faint outline of Belladonna and two of her goons. And it says her name is Belladonna. And Spider-Man can't even guess what kind of trouble she is. And then we got Roderick Kingsley there. Still blonde at this point. But he quickly went white after this. I don't know if that's because of all the gas exposure. But
yeah,
he's just kind of like laying there. He kind of looks like somebody told him that Liza Minnelli is overrated or something.
Yeah, he's swooning the bottom of the panel. I guess we should mention what Belladonna looks like. She's just a lady in like a almost like Carmen Sandiego. She's in like a long blue or purple trench coat and a big floppy hat with a veil over
like
her eyes.
Like a widow's veil, yeah. That's kind of the one thing to set her apart.
And she'll like shoot the gas out of the sleeves of her coat as well. So, I like the coloring on the cover, the purples and the yellow highlights on Spider-Man. But it is a weird composition. Kind of strange.
Yeah, Spider-Man, I guess because his spider sense is tingling, he's kind of inverted color-wise. he's got a black suit with the red webbing.
All right, so then we open it up, and Peter Parker's in a lab, and he's working on something. And do we know this fella he's in the lab with? Like, is that someone who's always been in these issues, or is that just a random dude?
I don't know. I've never heard of this guy before in my life. So he clearly didn't stick around too long.
And this issue is called Pretty Poison. and the eye in Poison is a test tube.
Look at that. That's pretty cute.
Yeah, so, yeah, they're in the lab. I guess this is it at his college, I take it? Or
yeah, he's at ESU.
Empire State University, right?
Yep, that's right.
So a couple of masked goons break into the lab there, and they got guns, and they're there to rob something. And they also have a lady, a blonde-haired lady with glasses, at gunpoint.
Yeah, and Deb Whitman.
Deb Whitman. Now explain, because I really am not familiar with her at all either. So, but she has a history with Peter Parker and everything, right?
Yeah, she sure does. I'm not sure of all of it. She was a big part of the '90s cartoon show, but I believe in the comics continuity, she was kind of Peter Parker's girlfriend for a little bit. She had kind of a troubled past with some kind of like a, I think she was married and like her husband was abusive and stuff like that. And then, like Peter Parker, like she developed some kind of weird mental fixation on him. And she kind of thought that he was Spider-Man, and he was just like, no, I'm not Spider-Man. And then it's like her therapist or something wanted him dressed up like Spider-Man to like show her that it wasn't true. And he's like, oh no, I'm not doing that.
Why don't you dress up like Spider-Man? Show
you. Yeah, like, oh, I don't think so. So I think she kind of ended up having like a mental breakdown a little bit. And
yeah, that's what I read.
Yeah, she was kind of out of the book for a while. But then I guess when during like Civil War, when Peter Parker revealed his identity to the public, she wrote like a big tell-all.
I knew it all along.
This guy made me think I was crazy, but apparently she had kind of gotten over it, and she was just like, "Eh, the publishers made me, you know, write this so scathing or make it seem so scathing, but it's really not. Like, I don't really have a problem."
I'm just concerned about the therapists in the Marvel universe because her therapist is making some guy dress up like Spider-Man, and then that Green Goblin therapist, he became as the Green Goblin or whatever.
Yeah,
what's going on?
None of these guys are on the up and up.
Fraser Crane would never do such a thing.
Didn't Mysterio pretend to be a psychiatrist for a while?
Oh, I have no idea.
He did.
But anyway, these guys break into the lab and they get Deb there to open up a locker there or a supply room, and they're stealing some canisters of some pretty common chemical that's not very valuable or anything. And neoatropane, I think is what it's called. And Peter's like, why are they stealing that? And
they're can't make mad that. What's the point?
Yeah. And the goon throws him in a closet, and it looks like he's about to shoot him. And Peter Parker's like, all right, I guess I'm going to have to, you know, go into my Spider-Man act here and right in front of people. But here they left something on a Bunsen burner, and it blows up and catches the whole lab on fire and everything.
Yeah, so, Peter Parker had done that, I think, on purpose. Like, he kind of elbow, you see him elbowing it, putting it under the fire so that it would, you know, explode and give him a distraction.
So then the sprinklers come on, and the goons say, all right, let's just get out of here. We don't have time to pull a trigger three times. Let's get out of here. So they run. That's a recurring theme in this book. These goons carry guns but refuse to use them.
Yeah.
If they did, Spider-Man would be dead right now. We'll get to that in a second. But then Peter Parker
caused mayhem by putting bags on mannequins. That's really all they want to do.
Sacks on mannequins. All right, so they put out the fire, and then Peter Parker, he goes running after them to see. They're driving away in a van, and then he hurls one of his spider tracers right on the guy's shoe, hits him right in the shoe. Yep.
So this guy who is, you know, hanging out the back, he should see this whole thing go down, does not notice this at all. And you think, like, on your shoe, I think you would notice that pretty much. Yeah. It's like it's on the back of his shirt or something. It's on his shoe.
This giant red spider-shaped disc just landed on my shoe. He's looking right at it. It's bright red. He's looking right at it. Doesn't notice it. So
no,
I thought he would have just thrown it on the van. You know, like, oh, you've got it on the van. Somewhere. But no, it's on the guy's shoe. And so anyway.
We'll easily be able to spot it.
He's about to go after them right now as Spider-Man, but as he's about to change his take his clothes off there, get into his Spidey outfit, the campus police show up, so he has to, you know, button back up and go inside and tell them all what happened and everything, and he's going to have to wait. But then, once they leave, he takes to the skies, and he's web-swinging through New York City. I like that panel of him swinging in front of the building and his big shadow on the building. That's pretty cool.
I like how this this spider tracer works, apparently. He just has to swing around the entire city and hope at some point it starts to tingle.
Yeah.
It's just terrible.
Hope it starts to tingle.
Yeah. I feel like I would never, ever do that. Like, I would never be able to find it. New York City's pretty big. I don't know if you noticed.
So he finds a building, and he's at a skylight, and he's looking down, and there's a Roderick Kingsley at his design table. And he's like, huh, what's going on? Oh, this is where he makes fun of him. He's like, he wasn't one of the goons. He's too short, too skinny, boy. And they used to call me Puny Parker.
Even at my spindliest, this guy would make me look like Hercules. I like that. That's kind of ironic for what he becomes later on. I like, it's pretty cool.
And Kingsley's got this little red scarf tied around his throat and everything, and he's working on his designs. And here we see some orange yellowish gas come seeping under the door. And he's like, what on earth is that fragrance? It's nice, but really, it's so strong. And then the door gets kicked down, and here comes Belladonna and her goons. And they're the same guys that just robbed the lab because they got purple pants, black shirts, and ski masks. So this Belladonna runs a tight ship, everybody in uniform. And now the room fills up with the gas, and she's leaning into old Roger Kingsley, and she's like, you stole my designs, you creep. But then Spider-Man, he just jumps right through the skylight, and he starts beating up the goons, Jack.
Yep. Sure does.
Pock, crack, thwack. But for some reason, he's not KOing them. These goons are popping right back up.
Yeah. So these are normal guys.
Yeah, so Spider-Man's like, hey, wait a minute. Maybe this gas is making me a little soft here. So then he really lays into him and he knocks him out. And he starts talking to Belladonna. And she just sprays more gas in his face, and he's getting all woozy. He tries to web her, but the gas dissolves her webbing. And then this is part here. One of the goons comes up behind Spider-Man and pistol whips him with the butt of the gun.
Yeah.
Could have just pulled the trigger.
And that would have been it. They don't want to, you know.
That would have been it for old Spidey-Man. But no, he doesn't know how to use guns. So he crocks him over the head with it, and Spider-Man gets KO'd, kind of, and Belladonna and goons leave, and they were just there to intimidate Roderick Kingsley, I guess. And then Spider-Man, though, he comes to. He doesn't completely go unconscious, and he grabs Roderick Kingsley. He jumps out of the skylight and out of the gas, so they're getting some fresh air. And how does Kingsley thank Spider-Man for saving him?
Well, he gets angry at him and says, you masked ruffian, you're responsible for this. You heard me. If you hadn't busted in, that harpy would have just stolen a few petty designs, which I could have traced, and been on her way. But now my studio is a shambles, and I was nearly killed. Just like the Daily Bugle says, you're a menace to society.
He's a loyal Daily Bugle reader. So Spider-Man, of course, you know, he calmly explains the situation. No, what he does is he webs Kingsley to the chimney.
Yeah.
Just leaves him there.
That's probably why he became the Hobgoblin right here.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I don't blame him. He did nothing wrong. Well, he did do something wrong in stealing the designs and all that. But in terms of Spider-Man, did nothing. Spider-Man roughed up his studio, destroyed it, and then webbed him to a chimney and left him there. And Spider-Man says, oh, that'll dissolve in a couple hours. And Kingsley's like, I'll catch my death of chill out here. He's like, oh, yeah, that'd be a real shame. So that's attempted murder right there, right? That he just he's trying to kill Kingsley.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you can quite count that, but
it's Spider-Man.
Class A jerkitude, that's for sure.
So now we cut back to the Daily Bugle. And
the Daily Globe, I guess.
Yeah, the Daily Globe. What the hell is that?
Actually, Peter Parker's working at the Daily Globe now? He's gone to the competition?
Yeah.
I didn't know that, Sarah.
Yeah, that's Peter Parker. So he's trying to talk to some editorial lady there that he knows. And this, I thought this was weird. She's like, all you photographers, he says, Sandy Jones is her name, right? And my favorite editorial girl, Friday, in the whole world. And Sandy Jones says, who? Oh, Peter Parker. Well, and what do you want? Photographers are never nice to me unless they want something. And I'll tell you right up front, I don't pose for anybody. Oof. What did she have in mind exactly?
I think you know. This must be one of those page three newspapers.
Apparently. So he takes her inside and he wants to talk to her about the fashion industry, right? And he's like, do you know anything about this Roderick Kingsley fella? And she says, oh, he's got a big fashion show coming up. And he says, hey, I'd like to take photos of that fashion show. But I work at a different newspaper, but I guess I work here too. So
I got kids to feed. Oh, wait, no, I don't.
I have the assignment. And she's like, yeah, I guess. But Peter, Mr. Bushkin won't want you to waste your time on that. Who the blue hell is Mr. Bushkin?
I guess he's their J. Jonah Jameson.
So in Spectacular Spider-Man, he works at the Daily Globe, and in The Amazing Spider-Man, he works.
I mean, this must have been, I don't know what happened, but he must have somehow gotten fired from the Bugle, and eventually he obviously gets rehired, but yeah, it's very strange.
So he's excited to go to this fashion show, but before that, he has to get back in the lab and try and fix his webbing, you know, because he can't have it dissolving by that gas that Belladonna has. But then he's like, I need a sample of the gas before I figure out how it counteracts my webbing, so I'm kind of screwed, you know? And then is he worried about being able to buy groceries or something? And then that Deb just shows up, and she's kind of
like, I can't afford to buy a gas mask. Like, you work in a chem lab.
Yeah.
Did you watch Breaking Bad? Like, just take one from there.
She'd be lying around everywhere. But Deb comes in with a sack of groceries, and she's like, oh, Peter, I saw your shopping list on the desk out there, so I just went and bought all the stuff you wanted. Wow, Deb, thanks. That is pretty great. It's Deb. Man.
She's a catch.
Yeah, and he kisses her on the cheek there, and he says, hey, when it's all said and done, I'll take you out to dinner. And she's like, oh, really? And the door closes, and she says, I think I like that man, .. very much.
Ooh.
Poor Deb. What's Mary Jane doing when all this is going on?
Yeah, where was she at this point? I mean, she had kind of left for a good chunk of the book there. This is probably more around the Black Cat era. Yeah, before Mary Jane really comes.
One of the things that he had Deb buy was a big bottle of vinegar.
That's right.
Because he was doing research. Oh, because he realized that chemical they stole from the lab, that Neo-Asper or whatever, that it's one of the main chemicals in Belladonna, the poisonous plant. So he was trying to find out a way to counter the effects of Belladonna poison. And he's like, oh, you got to drink a bunch of vinegar, I guess. So he's just doing shot after shot of vinegar. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, not since Rocky drinking all those eggs has there been something so gross.
And he says, I'd hate to think that I'm reactivating my ulcer for nothing. And apparently he did have an ulcer. It was diagnosed in like issue 130-something of Amazing Spider-Man. I don't know, something like that. But how about that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was one of the trivia notes.
A joke. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the trivia little items on the page I read.
I guess that makes sense. I mean, you've got to be under a lot of stress if you're Spider-Man. Like, yeah.
I mean, just Aunt May alone would drive me up a wall.
Oh, you know? God, yeah. Can only eat so many wheat cakes.
So he goes to the fashion show, and Roderick Kingsley comes out, and he's wearing this big floppy, like, orange or red or pink bow tie. It's very strange. And he's unveiling his new collection, Jank, and he pulls back the curtain, and well, what does he see?
Bunch of mannequins wearing burlap sacks.
Yes.
What? Burlap bags? Oh, God, no. This is an outrage.
This is an outrage. And Belladonna comes in. And oh, look, she also smokes a cigarette in one of them long cigarette holders, too. That's a good look.
How you know you're a villain. Yeah, I'm one of those.
And Peter Parker says, oh, it's Belladonna. I better get out of here and change into my Spidey outfit. So he sneaks into the back, and here he goes into the model's dressing room. Parker knows what he's doing. But no, the models are all passed out because there's like that gas and everything, you know? And really, why do they even have models? They had all those fine mannequins. Why do you need models? But this is also weird. So this model's passed out in front of her mirror and everything. And Parker says, it's a good thing you're gassed. I've never done this in front of a lady before.
That checks out.
And then he wants to make sure he doesn't breathe in too much of the gas. So he webs his mouth and nose.
Now, here's the thing that doesn't make sense to me. Like, Belladonna's guys don't seem to be wearing gas masks. They're just wearing, like, pantyhose on their head, essentially.
They must have, like, an antidote or something, you know? She probably, yeah, that's probably the way that works. But, yeah, you think
she
would...
She doesn't seem like she's wearing a mask at all. She's got, like, her veil, but nothing covering her mouth, from what I can tell.
You think
I figured maybe she was attuned to it or something, but...
He would just pass out from the webbing over his face and a mask. Yeah. But he's like, yeah, this will work.
Yeah.
He'd have been great during COVID. Webbed up his face.
You know what's worse is I was watching something this week where there was a story where he was like, he had his camera like under, you know, on his belt, like under the costume, you know, and it was still taking pictures while he was fighting. And somehow those pictures still came out. It's like, what?
Yeah.
How do you take pictures through your own shirt?
It's a very good camera. So, Belladonna, everyone's passed out and she's, roughing up Kingsley because apparently the gas doesn't affect Kingsley either. I don't know what's going on, but, she's roughing him up and then Spider-Man, he punches a guy through a curtain for some reason. knocks him out. Yeah. And then he knocks down the other guy and then, all the lights go out and he's like, hey, but I can still see. And he goes, oh, that's right, Belladonna helps you see, like, somehow dilate your pupils or something, and so I can see better at night. I don't know. what I read about Belladonna is it makes it difficult to urinate or sweat.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah.
Have fun looking forward to that, Peter Parker.
But he chases Belladonna down, and she still has Kingsley. Look at that bow tie Kingsley's wearing, and he's a fashion designer? Come on. What are we doing here? But now the big confrontation with Belladonna, not exactly exciting. Why don't you break it down for us?
So she's like, idiot, just look at you. The great Spider-Man, you're practically out on your feet. Well, one concentrated gas overdose from this, and neither you nor Kingsley will ever bother me again. And Spider-Man just kind of jumps over her and gets behind her and, like, grabs her.
Yeah, just grabs the guy out of the hand.
Yep, and just, like, grabs her coat. And she just kind of slinks out of the coat and just kind of dives away. And she's kind of terrified now. She's like, no, 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 to take your hands away from me. Keep away.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I forget that, like, Doc Ock and those guys, like, they're, you know, used to me. But to a normal person, I'm sure I seem very scary. But it's like, I mean, they were normal people once, too.
Yeah, I thought they were leading to something like Spider-Man would know her if he saw her without the veil and the hat. But apparently they never followed up on it, so I guess that's not the case at all, really. So she's just freaking out.
I mean, they show her identity in those other two issues later on, so I don't think it's somebody he knows.
Yeah, that's not it at all. But she just, like, disappears, and Spider-Man, well, like, he passes out finally, right? And then when he wakes up, the gas finally gets to him. She's gone. And
when he picks up, he now has kidney stones because he can't use.
But he just looks out over the city and he's like, oh, well, at least I stopped Bella's gang. And I do have a sample of her gas, so I don't have to worry about my webbing falling apart again. I even brought this robbery to a screeching halt. Saved Kingsley and myself. Yep, I did everything except stop the villain. Great, just great. I must be the only guy in town who can win and lose at the same time. That's classic Peter Parker.
Yep. Nothing ever really goes his way completely. Every win comes with an equal loss.
Next issue, who is killing the great crime lords of New York? Find out in The Vengeance. Oh, Vengeance Gambit. I had to pan down a little bit. So there it is.
But
that's the issue.
You know, in a monumental page here where we get Thor and... Thor meets the Ricochet Monster, a fruit pies ad.
Yes.
I mean, this one kind of rivals that Aquaman one in terms of greatness.
Well, there's no great awesome. Guppies quote, but
it's true.
Yeah, there's this monster, and Thor apparently knows him by name, Ricochet, and he's throwing his hammer at him, and it's just bouncing off. He's hitting him with lightning, it's just bouncing off. So Thor does what anyone does in such a situation. He says, let's see if you can throw back these Hostess fruit pies. Apple was
I don't know where Thor pulled these out of. Like, he doesn't seem to have pockets, but he's got like 8 fruit pies on him at one time.
So then the little monster guy, he's eating these fruit pies and he's loving them. So then Thor somehow throws his hammer and the monster grabs the hammer. He just throws the monster into space with his hammer. But won't the hammer come back and then the monster will just come back? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess he expects the hammer to just, you know, wiggle its way out of his hand once it gets to where it's going. Because Thor's like, he's sure like, oh, once this guy gets back to his homeland, he can tell his masters about these fruit pies, and even they'll give up, you know, their plans to conquer Earth. Now we know why Thor really keeps coming to Earth. Not to hang out with the Avengers or
Jane Foster. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No. Fruit pies.
Just wants the fruit pies.
Apple and cherry. So there you go. All right, so that's Spectacular Spider-Man issue 43. We mentioned the creators Roger Stern, 20 issues of this issue, of this title, including 17 issues between 43 and 61. So this was like right, this is his first like issue of his run, basically. And over the course of the time of doing the show, I would say Roger Stern is one of my favorite writers that we've encountered. He's usually pretty solid. And what I liked about this issue, it almost reminded me of like an old Batman TV show villain, Miss Belladonna.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Because she's got the three goons and whatever with her. And yeah, it just seems like, oh, yeah, this is a Batman villain. So, but I like these types of Spider-Man stories where he just fights a different villain each issue. And
yeah, I think that was one of Roger Stern's big things, is he wanted to not really rely on the old rogues so much.
So I kind of like that aspect of it. There were a couple weird things. Peter Parker changing in front of that drugged out lady. And what was the other? Oh, yeah, making fun of Roger Kingsley. And then there's another one that was pretty good.
Anyway. Came back, though, so that, that works for me.
Yeah, so no real complaints here about the writing. I thought it was, you know, fine, I guess. What'd you think, Jack?
I think Roger Stern, yeah, overall is pretty good from what I've read of him. Like I said, the early Hobgoblin stuff is great. Like, once, you know, Tom DeFalco and other writers started coming in and getting their hands on him, not as good, but, like, he was actually really intimidating during the Roger Stern stuff, and I really liked it. There was a good story, like, where he was trying to blackmail everybody, and he's trying to blackmail J. Jonah Jameson. He's like, I'm going to tell everyone that you created the Scorpion. And, yeah, and, like, Spider-Man finds out about it, and he's, you know, mad, but he's like, you know what, Jameson, I'm going to stop the Hobgoblin. So don't even worry about it. But then Jameson's just like, screw you, Spider-Man. And he writes his confession in the paper anyway.
I like that.
Yeah. If you do stop the Hobgoblin, I'm going to tell everyone what I did. So
that's pretty good. The artist here is Mike Zeck, and this is early into Zeck's career. This is about 4 or 5 years in.
Early Zeck, for sure.
Yeah, like if you're looking at it, I don't know how many people would recognize Mike Zeck here. He did 7 issues of Spectacular Spider-Man over a stretch of 10 years. So not exactly a regular. He did issue 42, 43, and then 46. And then the other 4 issues were all spread out over the years. So just filling in here. But yeah, you wouldn't notice this is Mike Zeck. The one thing I noticed is the page layouts, the panel layouts. Like, he was doing pretty standard panels. And then there were pages where the panels were slanty, you know?
Sure, yep.
Yeah, did you pick up on that? And at first I thought, oh, well, maybe he's just doing that in the action sequences to try and give it some more pep or something. But no, there really wasn't a rhyme. Like, whenever it's just Peter talking to someone, you know, outside of Spider-Man, they were straight-on panels. And then occasionally in the action shots, they'd be tilted or slanty, but it wasn't a consistent thing. So
yeah.
I think it's just mixing that up. I don't know. But
like, maybe if it's just doing that only during like the gas scenes, like it'd be like, oh, gas is disorienting you. Like, that'd be kind of cool.
But there really wasn't no rhyme or reason to it. So, but anyway, yeah, not his best stuff, but this is 4 years before Secret Wars, 6 years before Punisher. So
yeah,
that's when you really get to Mike Zeck.
Got some growing to do. Yeah. And it may be the inks maybe affecting this as well. I don't know that he worked with Steve Mitchell that much.
Yeah, I'm not even really familiar with Steve Mitchell's work, so don't know. But all right, so what do you think, 1 out of 10 for Spectacular Spider-Man?
You know what? Overall, it was fun. I had a good time, so I'm going to give it a 7.
Ah, 7.
Yeah, I liked that he was just being a jerk to Kingsley, webbing him there on the chimney.
Yeah, you know what? I was probably going to get 6, but yeah, I'll go 7. What the hell?
That's, yeah.
It's fine.
It was interesting.
Good old Spider-Man.
Classic Spider-Man. Yep. Nothing too hard-hitting here, but a fun Spider-Man romp.
All right, Jake. So next week, it's my pick. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but I like wrestling. The old professional wrestling. Big wrestling guy here. And right now in the world of America, there's quite the storyline going on whether Cody Rhodes is going to finish his story at WrestleMania against Roman Reigns, the Tribal Chief, or is that dastardly Rock going to insert himself into the picture and take the main event? And as we're recording this, just moments after a big press conference where Cody Rhodes is now going to go up against Roman Reigns in the main event of WrestleMania, but it seems like the Rock still wants to get involved there and do some stuff. So I'm like, you know what? The Rock, he likes to get involved in a lot of things, and they don't always work out. And one such thing was Black Adam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to take a look at an appearance of Black Adam, and this would be Shazam, issue 28 from 1977. This might, if I'm remembering correctly, this is like the second or third appearance of Black Adam ever. So,
oh, okay.
Really? Because he started way back. We'll get into his history next week. But, yeah, so we're going to learn about Black Adam and Shazam next week.
That'll be awesome. That movie, I still couldn't finish it. Tried twice, and I was like, nope.
It's just not working. All right, so that's next week here on Flea Market Fantasy. And once again, if you're on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Go buy plenty of shirts. And until next week, don't get any jank on you.